While they were listening to this, Jesus went on to tell them a parable because he was near Jerusalem and the people thought that the kingdom of God was going to appear at once. He said, "A man of noble birth went to a distant country to have himself appointed king and then to return. So he called 10 of his servants and gave them 10 minas. Put this money to work," he said, "until I come back."
But his subjects hated him and sent a delegation after him to say, "We don't want this man to be our king." He was made king, however, and returned home. Then he sent for the servants to whom he had given the money in order to find out what they had gained with it.
The first one came and said, "Sir, your manor has earned 10 more. Well done, my good servant," his master replied. "But you have been trustworthy in a very small matter. Take charge of 10 cities."
The second came and said, "Sir, your manor has earned 5 more." His master answered, "You take charge of 5 cities." Then another servant came and said, "Sir, here is your mina. I have kept it laid away in a piece of cloth. I was afraid of you because you are a hard man. You take out what you did not put in and reap what you did not sow."
His master replied, "I will judge you by your own words, you wicked servant. You knew, did you, that I am a hard man, taking out what I did not put in and reaping what I did not sow. Why then didn't you put my money on deposit so that when I came back, I could have collected it with interest?"
Then he said to those standing by, "Take his manor away from him and give it to the one who has 10 minas." "Sir," they said, "he already has 10. He replied, "I tell you that to everyone who has, more will be given. But as for the one who has nothing, even what he has will be taken away. But those enemies of mine who did not want me to be king over them, bring them here and kill them in front of me."
Now, we are thinking this morning about times of war, and war is often about who's going to be in charge of a country, who's going to be the ruler, who's going to be the king. And that story from Jesus that we've just heard was about a man who was going to be king. He wasn't going to be made king through a war, he was just going to be appointed as the king. And by the way, I should say that we've got some pictures this morning that have been done by the beavers. I think this was Tommy's picture of the man going away to a distant country to be made the king. But before we get into the story, to understand it, we need to notice why Jesus told this story. Well, it says, doesn't he, that he told this parable, verse 11 here, because he was near Jerusalem and the people thought that the kingdom of God was going to appear at once. In the Old Testament, the first part of our Bibles, it speaks about a time when God's perfect kingdom would come, when everything would be put right and God's king would reign forever. And here are people who have worked out that Jesus is that king. He is the Messiah. And they're getting near to Jerusalem. They're getting near to the capital city. So they're thinking, well, this is it. This kingdom that they've been waiting for is just about to arrive, just around the corner. And they're really excited. It's a bit like the day before your birthday party, and you can't wait for that day to arrive. Well, that's the level of excitement that is here. That's the mood. And maybe the nasty Romans would get kicked out as well. So what a great day it would be. That's what they were expecting. But Jesus tells this parable to put them right, to correct them. Let's remember how it begins, verse 12. A man of noble birth went to a distant country to have himself appointed king and then to return. Jesus is talking about himself. He's the one to be appointed king, but it's not going to happen immediately. He's not going to bring God's kingdom in at once, as they were expecting. Talks, doesn't it, about a long journey to a distant country. Jesus is explaining that he's going to be leaving them. He'll actually be leaving this world altogether through his death and resurrection and being taken up to heaven. That will happen in Jerusalem. That will be Jesus being made king, being declared to be God's forever king. And then at some point in the future, he will return. Only then will God's kingdom arrive, God's perfect kingdom. They, you see, are expecting it at once, and Jesus says, no. First, I've got to leave and then return. And only then will the kingdom come. Now, that hasn't happened yet, has it? Jesus has not yet returned. We're still waiting for God's kingdom to arrive. How do we know that? Well, because this is not a perfect world. It's a world messed up with war and shame. God's perfect kingdom has not yet arrived. We're still waiting. We've been waiting for 2,000 years. The mistake these people made was they thought it was going to happen immediately. But we're more likely to make the opposite mistake. 2,000 years of waiting, and many of us think it's never going to come. I mean, did you wake up this morning thinking, this is the day that Jesus is coming? This is the day that he's going to return? Probably not. 2,000 years and we're not expecting it tomorrow. But you see, that's what Jesus is saying. 2,000 years, maybe more. God's perfect kingdom will only come when he returns. And the rest of the parable is about that waiting time. About what to be doing while we wait for King Jesus to return. So, it's bang up to date. It's about now. We're still in that waiting time. Now, in the story, before the king goes away, he calls his servants in and gives them each a bag of money. This was Alex's picture, I think, and I thought perhaps a caption might help a little bit for that picture. And the king says, put this money to work until I come back. So Jesus is offering people the opportunity to serve him, to serve the king. It's not just about using our gifts. They are each given some money, not for their own benefit, but for the benefit of the king. When he returns. Now let's just pause for a moment. I wonder if you see how special this is. Sadly, lots of people, their life has no real purpose for them. Oh, there's plenty of things to do, but no big reason for doing them. Nothing bigger than the next weekend. Or the next holiday. Now that's a bit like playing football without any goalposts. You might do some great dribbling, all sorts of fancy footwork. You might make some great passes. There might even be some crunching tackles. But if there are no goals, then what's the point of it all? You see, you might go to visit amazing places. And have wonderful holidays. Raise a marvellous family. and have a splendid house. But what's the point of it all? We are surrounded by people who seem to be happy enough, but dig below the surface. And what's the point of it all? Well, this parable is saying that history is going somewhere. King Jesus is returning. And we're invited to serve the King. For those who do, there's a reason for living. There's a future to look forward to. We can contribute now to the kingdom that is coming. And according to the story, people divide into three groups over that invitation. In the story, there were those who said, "We don't want this man to be our king." There are those who say they don't want Jesus to be their king. They don't want them, don't want him interfering in their lives. They might say, "Oh, I'm not sure I believe," or "I'm not sure." But Jesus suggests that the real issue is that they don't want him as their king. And at the end of the parable, Jesus tells what will happen to them. He says, "Bring them here and kill them in front of me." You see, it was rebellion against God that has mucked up his once perfect world. And God is determined that that's not going to happen to his new world. Those who say, "I don't want Jesus to be my king," are cutting themselves off from the source of life and love. And Jesus says one day it will be forever. So there's a big warning for anyone who says, "I don't want Jesus to be my king." Let's have a look at the next group. When the king returns, he sends for his servants to find out what they have been doing with the money that he gave them. Well, the first two have put the money to work, haven't they? The one, first one, he'd made 10 times the amount of money. Second one, he'd made 5 times the amount of money. And the king says, "Well done. Well done, my good servant." And they are rewarded. They've served the king in a small way. And now they're put in charge of whole cities. 5 cities. 10 cities. Jesus is saying that serving him has eternal value. Eternal consequences. And what good news that is. Good news where many have no real purpose. We can spend our lives serving King Jesus, joining in the mission of Jesus, and know that it counts. The Christian is a person who is going somewhere, who has a goal, a purpose. And that makes the difference to everything that we do. Imagine 2 people who are working in the kitchens of Buckingham Palace. One says, "I do the washing up." The other says, "I'm serving the king." Well, here's an invitation that means we can say that about everything. And there is no higher calling, no greater position. You might not be the prime minister. You might not be the England football manager. You might not be a rock star. But you can be serving the King of Kings. So there's the second response. The person who gladly serves King Jesus while we wait for him to return. But there was one more response, wasn't there? That other servant. Anyone remember what that other servant, let's have the next picture, what that other servant did? Anyone remember? Yeah? He had 1 bag of money, and what did he do with it? Do you remember? That is what happened at the end, yeah. But he just kept it, didn't he? Just hid it. This servant did nothing. Yeah, maybe he was very busy for himself, but he did nothing to serve the king. And what words did he hear? Well, verse 22 here, I will judge you by your own words, you wicked servant. Now, I don't think he'd murdered anyone. I don't think he was a drug dealer. But he just hadn't served the king. His excuse was a sham. Because if he really did think that the king was harsh, he would surely have done something. He was a servant in name only. Because he hadn't served the king. And so even what he has would be taken away when Jesus returns. So you see, there are two ways to reject King Jesus. Those who say, I don't want him to be my king. That was the first group. But also those who simply fail to serve him. Can't be bothered to serve King Jesus. I wonder which of the three groups you're in. Which words will you hear when Jesus returns? I said there are three groups. Really, there are only two. Because both the first and the last are not ready for Jesus' return. And for them it will be a terrible day. Wouldn't it be great to hear those words from Jesus? Well done, my good servant. It makes all the difference to how we look at life when we have that goal in view. The king is returning. What words will you hear when he comes?